So, you want to be a contractor. Ever wonder what it takes to become a contractor? The journey they go on to get where they are now, or the crazy things they see and hear on the job site. Well, you're in the right spot. Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor, the podcast. Join your host, Mike Fisher, as he talks to owners of construction companies from all over about how they got started, how they run their business, and some of the craziest stories they've experienced on their job sites. And now, your host, Mike Fisher.
Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor. This is episode number 20. My name is Mike Fisher. With me today, I've got the star of Concrete Cowboys. We've got John Stitch. How you doing, sir?
How you doing, Mike?
Good,
thank you,
man,
for having me.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to join us here. Kind of how we get all these started. We want to hear your story. How did you get into this industry, and what led you to where you are now as a concrete guy?
You know, I got into construction right after high school. And I was an athlete, so I played football. And while I was going to football, I got a summer job working at a contractor. He was a home builder, a pretty big home builder in Southern California here. And they're actually still building. I think it's a fourth or fifth generation company. I won't name them, but pretty respectable. And I started working for them in the summer of my first year at college. And it was kind of funny because I was actually working at the owner's house, and he lived in a pretty good size, you know, mansion in this nice gated community. And what I didn't know is that, he had this giant bird cage. It was probably, I don't know, 15 feet wide by 20 feet tall or something crazy. And it was wood and wire. And, the guy that I was working for, which was one of his general superintendents, he says, "Hey, Mr. Blah, 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 would like you to tear this birdcage down and get it out of here." And, you know, I've just always was raised with a good work ethic and always wanting to be the fastest and the best at what I've done. As for some reason, that was instilled in me at a very young age. And it's just the way I've always been. So I ripped that thing down in probably, an hour at the most. And I had it all stacked up and the wire all rolled up and got it out of there. And just then the guy came out of his house and he says, the guy's name that I was working for was Nick. And he says, "Hey, Nick, get over here." And he says, I don't know who this guy is, but I want him on one of my crews like now. So he stuck me on one of his home building crews. And I was only able to work for another 2 or 3 weeks so that I had to take off for football. And, you know, I did a good job, but they wanted me to come back, you know, when I had time off, but I never did. I got into the concrete business because all of my friends had worked for this one gentleman that's still, you know, they're another, I think it's third generation company going right now, but I'm still good friends with them. And so I started working for him, and I worked for him for about, I think it was a solid 8 to 10 years. And that was in the 80s, probably 83, 84, 85, somewhere around there. And they taught me a lot, you know. I mean, they specialized in podium deck structures, structural concrete. And it took me, you know, not too long before I became a foreman and started running work for the guy. And he was union when I first started. And then he went non-union after like 6 months of me being there. And that was his whole plan of attack anyways. And he ended up getting rid of most of his crews because they were all, I hate to say this, but they were spoiled union guys. I stayed on, and we had a great relationship, you know, a work relationship, ended up becoming buddies. And he taught me a lot. I mean, I learned a lot there. And, you know, half of this business, not half, but 90% of this business is retaining what you learn and keeping all that in, being able to keep progressing and stay with the times. And if you don't progress, you'll get left behind, you know? So yep. Here it is. I think it's 38 years later. And here I am. Now we're doing you know, I've been through a couple of ups and downs, obviously, like you do in this business. You know, I mean, it's cyclical, and we've survived. So I guess we're doing something right.
At what point did you go from working for somebody to kind of being on your own in your own company? And what was that process or that transition or the impetus behind that transition?
You know, quite honestly, I never intended to go do my own thing. What happened was, you know, as I rose up as a foreman for this reputable company, people take notice of that just as well as they do with my foreman today. And you get offered side jobs and things like that. Well, I started doing some side work, and they were pretty sizable side work. So I figured I better do this legit just to cover my butt. And so I went out, I got my contractor's license, which really doesn't mean anything. I mean, anybody can go get a license, okay? And you can get the bond, and then you can get some insurance. But, you know, you got to deal with workers' comp. You need an office. So many different things. And I never intended to go out and be a contractor. But the gentleman that I worked for, who I was also really good friends with him and his wife, because I grew up with them, right? It's like since sixth grade. And so I really knew his wife's family better than I knew him, actually. And they were going through a kind of a crazy divorce, which kind of caused dissension. I don't know why it caused dissension between he and I, but I think that he wanted me not to communicate with her or them on that side. I don't know. It's kind of strange. So yeah, we got into it one morning and I just quit. And when I quit, I didn't know what I was going to do. And I was actually living with a girl and had responsibilities and things like that. And so I started out just doing, like, you know, some little driveways, some little additions, anything that I could get my hands on. You know, some of these other contractors would hire me to go lay out and form up their stairwells on their projects that, you know, maybe they couldn't either figure out or they didn't have time to do, or maybe some of their carpenters were busy. I don't know. But I had one guy who used to hire me quite a few days out of the week to go, you know, I'd take a laborer carpenter with me and I'd go slam out a couple of stairwells, you know, in an afternoon and, you know, make $1,000. And that's kind of the way I worked. And then I remember I landed my first job that was over 20 grand. And I thought I was really king shit, you know. I was like, oh my God, I'm really something now, you know. And, you know, you might make a couple grand out of that, right? After it's all said and done. And then I landed another job, you know, 60 grand, then 100 grand. And then all of a sudden you're getting into the $1 million jobs. And over the years, it just keeps progressing and progressing. And, you know, to date, our biggest project is just under 20 million. And that's good size for us. You know, we're non-union. We usually average about 100 guys. We've been as high as 220. We've sold as much as, so far I've sold, my best year has been 48 million. And my smallest year, of course, is, you know, like I just told you, 22 grand.
40 grand.
But, you know, and it varies. Like I said, it's cyclical and you're either busy or you're not. It's feast or famine in this business. And we currently are on track to probably do double what I've ever done. It's really busy right now. We've got some really good clients. We're working for, I won't mention the names, but we're working for one of the third largest builders in the country who is giving us quite a few projects to look at, and we'll probably acquire at least 50% of those. And it's pretty good, size amount of work there. So that's kind of what drove me into contracting. And I can tell you a little story with that. So I was working, my first go around was with a couple of partners, and those didn't last too long because I'm a worker and these dudes wanted to be on the golf course or walking in the park with their wife at 11 o'clock when I was swinging, you know, hammer and pushing a hose around a deck to pour some concrete, right? Yeah. And so those didn't last long. Each one of them, I think, lasted like a year, maybe a year. And then I ran into this, the company that I used to work for called me up because we were still kind of good friends, but not, you know? And he called me up. He said, "Hey, I got a project. Can you come run it for me?" And I said, "Well, I've got some things that are pending and I could come run it for you. But when I got to go, I got to go." And he says, "Oh, it's not that big of a job, you know, and I think you can get in there and get out in whatever, 3 months or some crap like that, right?" And so when I showed up, it was over on Wilshire Boulevard and close to Santa Monica. And it was a 45,000 square foot single level structure with a bunch of ridiculously stupid design, in my opinion, of a receivership/warehouse attached to it. That it wasn't very big. It was probably 60 by 60 and shit, 20 feet tall. And it had concrete walls all the way around it. And it was only a 12 foot high deck or something ridiculous. It was a Strauss. It's been changed since. But so there was this Israeli guy who was one of the owners, right? And he was also the GC. And so I show up there, and back then,
you know, it was not a little.
Yeah. Oh, he was a good dude. And so I was young, you know, I think I was 25 or 6 or something. And I had long hair and I was still, you know, pretty rocked out from playing football. And, you know, back then you could wear shorts, no shirt, work boots, you know. And so this guy, you know, we just started the project and we're digging footings. And I'm out there and I hear him on the phone. He's like probably 20 feet from me. And he's on the phone and he's like, he called the guy that I was working for. And he says, "Tim, what the fuck is going on my job?" And I'm like, what's with this guy? And he's like, "You told me you were going to give me your best guy. And I got this young punk out here with long hair. Fucking, I don't know. Does he know what he's doing?" And I just listened to him and I was laughing, you know, and I'm still driving stakes and setting up calls. So then he gets off the phone and he comes over and he says, "Listen, I have a time limit here. And if you go over, I'm going to charge your boss and I'm going to da 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 da." I said, "Okay, listen, guy." I said, "I don't need you to talk to me. That's the way you're going to act." I said, "But nobody can do this thing faster than me." I said, "I can guarantee you that." I said, "So why don't you just kind of kick back?" And, you know, he says, "Well, I got 2.5-3 months max. And I got to be framing." I said, "Okay." So at 6 weeks, I had the deck installed and I'm pouring concrete, right? And I wasn't supposed to use the alley, but the thing was wide enough that I had to get a second pump because at that time they only had, I think the biggest pump was a 55 meter. It might've been a 52 meter, which doesn't make it to the rear of the jaw. So I ordered up another 36 meter or something to pour like the back 30 feet all the way across down the alley. And it was forbidden to do that. So I set that thing up at like 6:30, woke the neighbors up. And I told that pumper, I said, just wide open. "I'm going to feed you trucks. We need to get 100 yards out of you like as quickly as possible." And we did that. And it took like an hour. And he was rolling up and here comes the neighbors screaming at me, wanting to fight me and shit. I'm like, "Yeah, go back in your apartment, guy." then the cops show up and I already had the pump cleaned up and out of there, right? And he says, "You know, you're not supposed to use the alley." And I said, "Listen, we used it for a few minutes. We had a little logistical issue, no big deal." And they said, "All right, but if I get any more complaints," you know, so I took a little slap on the wrist. We got it poured. And while I was pouring the deck, this Israeli gentleman had about 6 of his buddies/investors up on the deck, and they were all in suits and they're there and he's got his hands up in the air and he's like, "I can't believe it. This fucking punk, 6 weeks pouring my deck. fucking crazy. And, you know, he's going nuts, right? And so then afterwards, we're done pouring and I'm cleaning up, getting ready to get out of there. And he comes up to me and he says, "Hey, you want to work with me?" And I said, I'll take it into consideration. I said, but I kind of got my own thing going on. And, you know, I'm only doing this job as a comeback for Tim, you know, and he asked me to do it for him. So, you know, that's all I'm doing here right now. And okay, well, you got my number. So I think I went for about on one of them stints with one of those other partners that didn't work out. And after that, I called him up and I needed financial backing. You know, when you're doing these structural decks and you've got to pay for shoring, mud and pumping and payroll and everything that goes along with it, you know, it's a couple $100,000 a week. And, you know, it doesn't take that, you know, I didn't have that. Right. So I called him up. And I said, "Hey, you ready to start this up?" And he's like, "Yeah, let's go." And he was a pretty big investor in property. So I actually did there was a big site on downtown LA, which was one of my first projects with him, which was a 14-acre Home Depot, Food for Less, a Rite Aid, Starbucks, McDonald's, all on the same lot, right? And it was its own little community down in LA, right on Wilshire and 6th Street. And that was like one of my first jobs with him, which, you know, we did as partners. And I went in there and I think in like 18 months, we completed the whole thing. And that thing had like 60,000 yards of concrete in it or something. About $20 million job. And that was my first experience as a partner with a real partner who could financially back me. And we made some good money. We went on and we did a few other projects that were good size. And then he was older, so he really didn't want to be in the concrete business. And that was it. We kind of separated, but he helped me vault up to that next level.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's something that, like you said, kind of gets you to that next level. I have to imagine kind of coming from the operations side, right? You're coming from the field, you kind of probably went to the school of hard knocks for the business aspect of it, right? The back office and the hiring and all those kind of things. But what was one of the, I'm sure you struggled probably with a lot of it, but what was one of the biggest struggles and biggest hurdles to kind of overcome in that side of the business as you were growing?
You know, as we're growing and we're currently growing right now again.
Yeah.
And it just takes a lot of money. I mean, you know, as the payroll gets up to $200,000 a week, and that doesn't include, you know, all the other expenses that come along with it.
Yeah.
You know, we're purchasing new equipment. We're working for, we're doing a lot of prevailing wage, which, you know, it's not the smartest thing when you're growing, because it does take a lot of money to fund that, and they hold your retention until the very end of that project, which, you know, some of these projects are good size, so that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And you won't see it till it's done. And you're putting out big dollar for these guys. And the problem is you can make really good money on prevailing wage if you can fund it.
Right.
And so far we're doing okay, but it's a struggle. I'm not going to lie. And then when we start working for these other contractors that are bringing us, you know, larger and larger and larger projects, because that's the way this business goes, is you start out and it's like a ball that's rolling downhill. It just keeps picking up momentum and keeps, you know, getting bigger and bigger, like you see in the cartoons, right? And that's kind of the nature of this business if you're a decent contractor, right? And you have ethics and you don't screw anybody along the way, and you know, you give and you take, and you don't just always take, right? People will want to work with you, and I think I have that reputation, and they want to see somebody that's going to lead them, right? They don't want somebody that they're going to talk to and is passive and this and that. When I walk into a meeting, I'm the leader. I want to make sure I'm leading that meeting, and there's a reason for that. And that was something that my grandfather always taught me, is that, hey, when you do something, have confidence, you know, know your craft. You better know everything, right? And that's what I try to teach my boys. I got three boys and a daughter. And my boys, one of them actually just started working for me in the office here about a month ago. And he's 20. And I try to instill that in them, is just have confidence and you better know your craft. I mean, you go into these projects that are, you go to meet on one of these projects. I mean, let's face it, you go sit down with a big company, they've got 10 people in there. And if that's a sizable project, even if it's a little one, but a sizable project, they've got 10 people in there. They're going to sit down and they're going to grill you with questions.
Yeah.
And if you don't have answers, you're probably out. You probably won't get the job. And it's just kind of the way it goes. And you better know what every trade's doing. You better know what you're doing. You better know those plans upside down, right? I usually don't even study the plans until it comes to that point. When they call and say, hey, we want to have a meeting with you because, you know, your price is right there, which usually means you're too damn low. So we get into the meeting and that's when you need to be prepared. Yeah. And so if you don't do your homework and you don't walk in there with a so-called, you know, dog and pony show, you're not going to get the project. You know, there's one hiccup. You know, that one guy in the corner who asks you a question and you're like, and you can't answer the question. That's it. You're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of strange, but that's the way it goes. Yeah. And when you walk in there, you've got to be able to, at least me, myself, when I lead a meeting, I'm in there, I'm telling them what I want from them. I don't want them to tell me what they need from me, because I know what they need from me. I tell them what I want from them and what I want their MEPs to be doing and how much I rent my own schedule and I put all their MEPs in it. And I tell them your plumber only has this many days, your framer has this many days. And I don't want them to go over, because we can work together on it and we might have to cram in, you know, the same spot for a couple of days. So what? You know, that's the way I grew up in this business. You know, just everybody on the deck at one time. And it is what it is, but people hate it when they're doing it. But when it's done, everybody makes money.
Right.
And that's what people fail to realize while they're bitching about, you know, while they're bitching about having to work with someone else, or he's on the deck, or he didn't give me the extra day. He's got his guys up here. Well, you can bitch at me now, but, you know, look at your results later when you get your profit on the job, but you didn't spend those extra 3 days. And that makes a big difference, you know, especially when you're doing multi-level, you know?
So I mean, getting to that level too, I mean, obviously takes quite a bit of manpower. I mean, that's a struggle for everyone right now, but I mean, if you're growing and you've got, you know, you're looking at growing the way you guys are growing, and not being union where you can just, you know, pick up the phone and tell me you need 20, 30 guys next week or whatever it is. What's that process like for you guys? Where are you finding success? What's been working for you guys? Where are the struggles, you know, finding that quality labor?
You know, we got both ends of it. You know, like when we need manpower, you know, it's like you go out and you either, you try not to poach guys that are working for people that you know, number one. Or even that you don't know. I try not to do that. What I try to do is have my field guy ask around and see if he can find out who's unhappy, who may want to jump ship, but not intentionally. And then what I'll do 9 times out of 10, if there's a guy out looking for work and he seems to be a reputable guy, I'll call that contractor and ask what happened. And that doesn't always happen with me. Like, I've had a couple guys leave and then they've gotten hired from other companies. And I've even texted a couple of those owners and told them, hey, why didn't you call me? I would have let you know what the story was with that guy. You know, when I have somebody working for me for 17 years and he splits, there's got to be an issue, right?
Right.
And you would think that they would be smart enough to give me a call or, you know, listen to what I have to tell them. And yeah, that's not the case. It doesn't matter. Some people are just naive about that. But as far as manpower goes, I let my field guy handle that. You know, he's in touch with a lot of foremen, a lot of supers, and a lot of companies that handle, you know, guys that are unhappy or they know all these, you know, everybody knows everybody in this business. So,
right.
And when you've got work, when you've got work and, you know, those paychecks are on time, which isn't always, but those paychecks are on time, people come. They just show up. You know, they want to work for you. You know, because like I just mentioned, you know, there's times when those paychecks aren't on time. You need to struggle for a week or two. And it really stresses some of the guys out. And that was happening when I worked for a guy. You know, I mean, I remember back when I worked for that guy I told you about, there was a couple of times when it got really, really slow. And I think I went a few months without a check. But he would supplement me with a little bit of cash, or I was on an appointment. And that's just the way it goes. And if you don't understand that, something's wrong, and you're just not a loyal employee, in my opinion, you know, because you're going to get paid eventually if you could stick it out. If you absolutely can't stick it out, I understand, go find another job. But I wouldn't expect anybody to take it out on the employer. The reason I say that is, you know, us as employers, at least us for sure, me, we take care of our guys. You know, that's why I'm in this business, really. I mean, I could have folded up in 08 and got out. I had plenty of properties and plenty of businesses going that were mailbox money. And I sold a lot of that. I sold a lot of the toys and everything I had going on to keep this concrete business going, because I could not walk out on my guys. You know, I have some guys now that work for me for over 30 years. And, you know, I respect that. And they've helped me get to where I'm at. So I'm not going to walk out on them, you know. And that's just me. You know, I have a big heart. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, call me whatever you want. The stupid businessman, if that's what it means to you, I don't think so. You know,
I think it creates something in the industry where people, like you said, people know that obviously you've got the work, right? You've got the job. And if that's your mentality, then it creates a level of, you know, kind of culture inside the business that you said, attracts people and it keeps them. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So it sounds like a lot of your business is coming from kind of just being in the industry forever and growing up in it and, you know, kind of that reputation, which is awesome. But I know that you also have another, and I don't know, maybe use it for a marketing aspect or what the purpose or the intent, you know, starting it, but the Concrete Cowboys, right? I mean, that looks like you get a little YouTube show, right? You know, I mean, to be honest, it's the reason why I do this, right? I mean, I do insurance for contractors, but this is a way for me to kind of just be in the industry more and know some more people and kind of, you know, network, understand what the industry is doing and who the players are. But what was the impetus behind kind of starting that on your side? Was it just fun? Was it marketing? What was the plan there?
So for about the last 8 years, I jumped into partnership with my current partner, Noah, and he's a great guy. I mean, I've had I think this is my third partnership over the last, 39 years. And so far, and this will be the last one because we get along great. He's a lot younger than me. He's only 34, I believe. But we get along great. He's like an old soul. He understands everything. He's a sharp guy. He's multifaceted as well. He handles our development side, as far as the all the legal aspects and things like that. He's an attorney. So, but he's a land use attorney. He's not out here to try to, you know, litigate projects or, you know, get into sticky situations. That's not us. So he handles the development end of it, gets, you know, the architects and the engineers and all the MVPs and plans out the projects, and then I'll go in and build. So we have that aspect of this business too. It's a company called Leap of Faith that we do small on subdivision. We do modular building. We're one of the leaders in that industry. We're set to probably this year in 2022, we're going to set about 150 homes. And that'll be on the development end. And we're just looking to do bigger projects from there on up. But anyhow, he also has a production company that he started with his brother. His brother's a producer. He's a producer. And they've done a few Netflix shows that they've got out there, some documentaries and stuff. But he came up with this idea of the Concrete Cowboys because he's, he's so intrigued with this business and the way that I, you watch the clip, so you kind of see how I act on the projects. I'm very serious, very passionate. I don't like mistakes. Everything is like you're on the stopwatch. Let's go, right? And that's because if you don't get the concrete down in time, you've got finishers up there, you've got pull-ups, you've got mud sitting in the hose, you've got everything, traffic, just everything is so calculated and it has to be like a smooth operation. Otherwise, it creates tension and mistakes and things like that that really upset me. So when I go to a project, I am strictly directing traffic or whatever it takes, because the key is to get those trucks to that pump as fast as you can. Get them in and out.
Right.
And the worst thing is truck drivers sitting there bullshitting while they're washing out their truck. That drives me nuts. And, you know, because you've got to unload these trucks. And when they're sitting there bullshitting, you can't do it. So, you know, I mean, that's kind of what drove that Concrete Cowboy. So we're on our second episode. We just got done filming last week. So we're going to come out with another little clip here soon. We haven't really posted it yet. I don't believe. I think it's just those clips are just sent to me by them. They haven't put up the YouTube. They haven't loaded it up yet. So that's going to come. I don't know what the full intention of it is. I just know that it's reality of our business and the way things happen on a daily basis as far as excitement and just arguments and putting out fires on a daily, you know, it's just always something. It's always something. Nobody's ever happy.
Right. I'm agreed. Yeah. And then what I think is cool about it is the construction industry and contractors, as a whole are pretty, I don't want to say late to the game, but kind of just behind the eight ball when it comes to, technology and digital and kind of everything that's happening right now. And so, obviously I'm doing what I can on this small level, you know, with a podcast which is, pretty tech forward. And so I think you're doing what you're doing. I think you're ahead of the curve, and I think it's good. And it's good to see the eyes and being able to. And if nothing else, I mean, one of the probably side benefits of it that maybe you didn't even think of is kind of creating a sexiness to the business to a point where, you know, we're attracting more people into this industry as well, right? I mean, that's never going to hurt either.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've shown those clips to probably about 10 different people, and every one of them loves it. Every one of them is interested in it, and every one of them says, if you have a lot more of that, I would watch it. And it's just reality is what it is. It's just actuality. People really don't understand what I do for a living, you know, like I'll run into people that I meet, you know, at somewhere gathering or something, and they'll know that I'm a concrete contractor, but they don't know to what extent. They don't know what I do to the full extent. I don't think my wife even really kind of knows the size or the scope that we do, you know? No, I mean, and so then I'll get guys that'll be like, hey, at a party, you know, but hey, and, I got a clothesline slab, you know, at my house I need done. Can you come on out and do that? And I'm like, okay. You know, so, and I'm always trying to be nice. I'm always trying to be nice and I can't say no. So I'll set them up with one of my foremen, you know, maybe they'll go over there and do it. Maybe they won't. But it's kind of one of those deals. Where unless people watch something like the Concrete Cowboys, they don't know what really goes on in this business. And, you know, obviously all my competitors and everybody else, I don't know that they're as involved as like I am, because I'm out there and I get my nose in it, right? And then I come back in the office and I do paperwork and I bid. And I could work here all night if I wanted to. Sometimes I'll catch myself, it'll be 6 o'clock and I'm like, oh shit, I guess I better get home, you know? It just never ends, you know? I mean, right now as we're sitting here, I've got, I don't know how many texts and emails and phone calls, and It's just the nature of this business, you know? And like I started to say earlier, no one's ever happy. You know, it's never fast enough. It's never good enough. Your price is too high. They want everything, right? But you just got to grow to know all that and have a thick skin and learn to say no. Okay. Which I've, in the last, I don't know, 10 years, I've learned to finally be able to say no. Okay. And I don't care, and shove it up your ass, you know, things like that, that I would never say.
That's an important part of the evolution, right? An important part of the evolution of a contractor. You start out and you kind of, not only do you want to, but you need to take everything that comes, right? Because you need to start kind of getting business and getting your name out there. But as you grow and as you get more confident, like you said, the confidence is key, and knowing what you're doing and being good at what you're doing. But I mean, to be profitable and to be able to sustain and grow, you have to be able to say no, and you have to be able to say, sorry, I can, or, you know, whatever it takes. But you got to be able to, like I said, that's an important part of the evolution of a business and a contract.
Yeah. And then in today's world, you're starting to get all of these, you know, kind of medium to, younger builders that they think that, you know, they're the only project on site. Right. And they don't, right. Maybe they know me, maybe they don't, but I'm always in, you know, slight fire situations with those guys because they call with the most ridiculous stuff. You know, I had a guy call me the other day, you know, it's out in an area where they shut down the sidewalks at like 4 o'clock. You can't do anything after that. And it's like, I think 2:30, and we were short about a yard and a half or something in one of the piles. It's a pile. Okay. Doesn't matter. It gets a grade beam on it. And if you have an extra 2 feet of pile that you've got to pour up when you pour the grade beam, it doesn't matter. Right. I've been through that situation a million times. The engineers don't care. But this guy wants to call and argue with me about it. And I end up telling him to go fuck himself because I don't really give a shit. You know, and he thinks that I need him. He thinks that I need to do his next 2 or 3 jobs. And I'm like, no, I don't. And I don't want to. So I run into that a lot now. You know, of course I have, I've got customers that have been customers for years and years and years, and they always will be, and they treat me with respect, and they know the program. They know that we're going to get it done. Do we have arguments along the way? Yeah, of course, you know, but they're forgotten about, you know, within minutes. And that's the real way of building, you know, because we're old school. I'm new school, but I'm old school.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, actions out in the field. In the office, we're new school. We're up to the times. We're with the latest and greatest estimating software. We've got at least 10 people here in the office, and it's for development and concrete. And we have our shit together, so to speak. And we operate on a different level. So I don't, you know, some of my competitors, like that, for instance, I met this one guy a few weeks ago. He's a real tool. I mean, a real tool. It's obviously, I'm not going to mention his name, but he has a sizable project, you know, he's got a sizable project. It's around $5 million and he wants us to do it, but yet he's approaching me the wrong way and in the wrong manner. And saying the wrong things to some of these customers that I gave him phone numbers to do a background check. And it all gets back to me, right? So when we had a meeting with him, me and my partner went in there, and I was very brushed with him, you know? I was like, I didn't care. And I showed him that purposely, that I don't give a shit if I do your job or not. And that kills him, you know? I know it does. Because he wants me to go kiss his ass and oh, yes, sir, and no, sir. Go fuck yourself. I don't really care. And I'm just not that guy, you know? And it's nice to be able to get to that point to where you could be able to do that. And like you said earlier, as you're growing, you are kissing ass and, you know, doing a lot of shit you wouldn't normally do and doing stuff for free and things like that to grow. And once you get your base going, then, you know, you start leveling out on that. And eventually you tilt the scale the other way and become brash because Right. Some of these guys are out of line. And they need to know it.
Well, you have to be comfortable, right? I mean,
Yeah, they need to.
I mean, you can't bend over backwards to everyone. Yeah.
I spend, I'm going to say 80% of my day probably chasing money that we would get screwed out of. And whether that be change orders, whether that be plan changes, whether that be guys trying to, you know, ask my foreman out in the field to do extra things without sending me the paperwork, things like that, you know, that it's all day. It's all day. I mean, we constantly have, you know, a minimum of like 8 to 10 projects going. And it's just a lot of moving parts, you know, from phone calls to emails to plans to just so many things, you know. And it's grown from, you know, from 30 years ago.
And so, I mean, obviously, it sounds you've got the show and that's a YouTube thing and you're kind of, like I said, ahead of the times there. Are there things you guys are doing deliberately in other aspects of technology, be it social media or websites or anything along those lines that kind of, you know, again, doing with purpose or doing with any sort of plan?
You know, not really. I mean, I have an Instagram that I throw stuff on there. It's mainly, I do a lot of smoking and barbecuing for my boys and my family. I put that on there, but I also throw, once in a while, I'll throw some projects up there, you know, when I go by and or something, I'll throw a video up there or something, a couple of comments. Other than that, promoting my boys, and I've got, like I said, three boys. One of them works in here, who's already out of high school. He does college online, as well as he does a bunch of stuff. Really great boy. He's my oldest. And then I got these twin 19-year-olds that just graduated last Thursday from high school. And they play football. So they're going to go to the University of Nevada. You know, putting them on social media all the time just to get them to the point where they could get looked at, and, you know, because of the pandemic really created a problem for the 2022 athletes. So,
yeah, for sure.
You know, that's the only thing I use that Instagram for. I don't do anything else. The office here doesn't do anything else. I think the, our website, you know, needs to be updated. That's it, you know?
Well, I mean, it sounds like you don't really have a need, right? And I feel like a lot of guys do that. It's kind of, and I mean, whether you have the need or not, I think it's a good kind of digital business card to have out there if you have the time and the means. But it sounds like obviously you guys are pretty focused on growing right now and you're able to. What does the future look like for you guys? I mean, obviously, like you said, it's going to grow quite a bit, but is that all just organic in your local area? Did you deliberately like kind of expand geographically or just bigger projects or what did that look like for you? And how does it look?
You know
in the future?
What, as we navigate our way through this, godforsaken business, you know, we try to focus on the developers as far as our workload. And we're kind of trying to keep our stable that way and kind of get away from the general contractors. It seems to be more problematic with them because they hired these kids right out of college, which God bless them, but they don't have any field experience and things like that. So you run into lots of issues projects, that are just misunderstandings, you know? So that's a problem. But like I said, I've always wanted to grow this business at a certain rate and be at a certain level. And I think this year, if not by the end of next year, we will be there to where I've always wanted to grow it, which is just a certain dollar amount that I think, you know, makes you someone in this business, whether we are or aren't. I can guarantee you everyone knows us, but they may not like us and they may, you know, they may love us. I don't know, but, and I don't care, but, I think we're on our way finally, with the partnership that I have. And I think we'll be there, you know, with our own development as well. It's kind of a safety net as well. You know, when the concrete business slows down, hopefully we'll still be developing. So kind of works hand in hand.
Did that development side come out of a passion or was it more kind of investment opportunity in, like you said, kind of a different revenue stream and kind of diversifying there?
Well, when I partnered up with Noah, he had already had that in the works, and he had one of his very first projects going, which was a home in Eagle Rock that was a modular home. And there's so many moving parts in this, in that industry that I had to learn a lot, you know. Yeah. I learned a lot on that project, but then our second project, which we weren't partners, we haven't been partners in the development only until like a year ago. And we, even though we're partners in the concrete business, I kind of still, right when we partnered up in that, you know, 8 years ago, I ended up helping them immediately. And kind of streamlining some of the stuff that was going on with their development. And there was a lot of things wrong that I could see, that we tried to correct. And there was a lot of things that mistakes that we made just as the developer with the learning curve of doing the modular, you know, cause you go from a conventional foundation to a modular. There's a lot of things you got to look out for. There's a lot of things that are way different than just a conventional build. And so back to your question, my partner, he's very green conscious and, vegan and things like that. So he, not that that has anything to do with it, but he, had that passion and, created that company, and it was already in the works when I came along.
That's awesome.
I was just an added tool for that company. And now that we see that it works, eventually, you know, finally, I should say,
right.
We had some rough goes. Trust me. We finished three projects, mm-hmm. and there were some rough learning curves, and which caused delays, which, you know, even though those things sold for good money, they kind of got burned up in the delays. So, yeah. You know, it's been a big learning curve, but we've kind of got a lot of that ironed out now. And now that I am an official partner of that company, I've kind of taken a lot of things under my wing, you know, put my thumb down on certain things that I'm not going to let people sit around and just collect, you know, a paycheck. And not that he would do that, but he's a very busy guy and doesn't always have time to sit back and analyze those kind of things.
Very cool, you man. Know. John, this has been rad. I look forward to kind of following you guys and watching you as you get that number on the concrete side, and for sure look forward to the Concrete Cowboys coming out and being able to help you out and promote that.
Perfect.
You ever need a cameo from an insurance guy and want to get some real talk on there, let me know. I can,
for sure.
It's fun stuff.
Yeah, hit us up.
I'm just kidding. Insurance is boring shit. Nobody wants to listen to that stuff. it would be the most boring reality show on the planet. But so anyway, yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Before we let you go, I want to let everybody know, give you a chance to kind of give you shout outs and let everybody know where to find you or how to get in touch with you and that's some of your shit, or just kind of, you know, all your plugs if you got them.
You know, we're completelyconcrete.com is our website. And then leapoffaith.com is our website. And then my Instagram is just, I think it's Stitchler32. I don't know why that's that. I had I had a nickname somebody started calling me that, Stitchler, and I'm like, what the heck? So yeah,
like it's high school football,
Stitchler 30. Yeah, Stitchler 32 is my Instagram, which is just going to show you a bunch of photos and videos of my boys and my barbecue and some of the projects. But other than that, hit us up. I mean, Concrete Needs. It's got all my info there, and you guys can hit us up. We really don't advertise, cool. You know, we've been fortunate enough that we didn't have to, so that's great.
We'll have to get together on some smoking techniques too.
Oh, for sure.
About a year now, but my bracelet's getting pretty good. So
Oh yeah. After you check out my Insta, you call me, let me know which one you want.
There you go.
Which one you need lessons on, because me and my boy Chad have got it down.
That's right. Very cool, man. Well, John, again, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Stay safe out there, and look forward to keeping in touch.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Hey, thanks for listening. If you had a good time, be sure to hit that subscribe button to get all the latest episodes. And if you had a really good time, leave a review to let us know what you thought. Until then, go gather some crazy stories on your job sites, and we'll see you next time on So, You Want to Be a Contractor.